Did it work?
It worked. Hi, Carrington.
It worked. Excellent. Can you hear me?
I can.
Can you see me?
I can see you.
Do you regret all the decisions you've been making up to this point of the podcast?
Never. Never.
So what's new, Buckaroo?
Not too much. No, nothing.
Change in the weather.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
And if this episode is anything to go on, it's going to blow. I made a weather joke.
Whether or not we wanted to hear it.
You are likely to be eaten.
You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torch of a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be.
So you're still in the same place? You haven't moved again since I last saw you?
No, how about you? You're likely to do that? No.
But no, I haven't moved in way too long. I have been, is it 4 or 5 years at least I've been in this place? That's too long to be in one place.
What,
too long for
move here.
A hobo like me.
Move to the outskirts of Portland, Oregon, and be near me.
That sounds like it's in America.
It is. It is.
Yeah. I have opinions. Opinions about your country. I mean, I say your country when I'm not also an American citizen. I have an opinion about our country. Mm-hmm. And my opinion is I should stay in this country.
Yeah, well, you've got that nice couch back there in your country.
I've got... No, it's a terrible couch. Don't mock my
couch. That's the, you know, but I thought that was the new
couch. That's the couch that I hate.
Oh.
No, this is the new couch that I don't like. Mm. Yes. So this is the difficulty of being a vegetarian.
So there was
I'm going to get rid of that leather couch, and I've regretted it ever since because my new couch is terrible.
I see. We have a new couch that it took us almost 9 months to get because of global supply chain. And they said at the time, they said, we ordered like in June of last year, like, you'll have it by Christmas. You're like, okay, great. You know, and then Christmas came and went, New Year's came and went, and then...
I didn't say which Christmas. Right.
Anyway, we got it. Now we have a couch.
Christmas will still exist when you get this couch. Right. Society will not have fallen such that Christmas doesn't exist, is all they can guarantee you.
That's something. That's saying something right now.
That's something.
Should we? We haven't read mail in a long time.
Should we?
We have a lot of a good mail that we've gotten over the past, like, several months.
Forever.
Since about the time I ordered that couch, so...
I copied some mail into your couch. Go find it. No, I copied some mail into the show, my notes and everything. So I'm like prepared to talk about feedback.
Excellent.
Which I am never prepared to do.
Well, let's go. Why don't you strike then?
Okay, I'm gonna pick a long one. Lane Mouse. That's a great name. The only Lane I've ever known in real life, I didn't know in real life, which was Lane Meyer from Better Off Dead, movie I adore. So for me, Lane is Lane from Better Off Dead. So this Lane is an awesome person because Lane is just a great name.
The only Lane
because of that one association.
Sure. The only Lane I know is Lane Nooney from Twitter.
I know that person too. Sorry.
And
I don't know in real life, but
well,
follow on.
I've met her like once for like 3 minutes. So technically I know her in real life, but mostly from
seems
Twitter.
Really smart.
Yeah.
Seems like intimidatingly smart on Twitter.
Yeah.
I think I'd be nervous meeting that person.
And if you're saying someone's intimidatingly smart, then that means they're...
I probably don't know what those words mean. Someone like me with a word like intimidating, that's a lot of syllables. Anyway,
but then there's Lane Mouse who...
Who wrote in to say, hello there. I'm late to the party, as usual, and only just discovered your Infocom retrospective podcast by chance while in a nostalgic mood and doing a few searches online. I want to say how much I love your episodes, and I hope that once the full Infocom catalog is finished, I even spelled catalog the right way. Lane, you and I are going to be buddies. You'll continue with some of the modern classics from the years after Infocom's closure, or even some of the precursors, such as Scott Adams' adventures. I was late to the Infocom party when the original titles were released as well, having a home computer that was one of the few to which Infocom ports, no Infocom ports existed. Wow, I wonder what the heck that was. They were on everything.
Yeah,
anyway, back in the 1980s, so my first introduction to interactive fiction was the Scott Adams Adventures, of which I played many. Well, basic in comparison. My love of interactive fiction was sparked by those old Scott Adams titles such as Pirate Island, Ghost Town, etc. My only exposure to Infocom back in the day was brief visits while on school computers or at friends, where I was able to tease myself with Zork or Enchanter or for short periods. I would later purchase and play most Infocom games as part of the original Lost Treasures releases in the 90s, and finished many of the games with variable hints and a lot of backtracking. Another feeling. To this day, I have a soft spot for Trinity, good choice, Beyond Zork, Plundered Hearts, Lurking Horror, and most especially, I love this, Moon Mist, which I know is a rather simple, low-difficulty game, but as a fan of haunted castles and folklore, it hit a very sweet spot for my personal tastes. And as an aside here, totally with you, Lane, I love that game. K is wrong, don't listen to K. Just when in doubt, don't listen to K. General rule.
On any subject.
Yeah. So we could separate our voices into left and right channels, and then people could choose if they want to hear only me or only you.
I like it.
By... So anyway, Lane, no point. Why I wanted to read this because of this next part in the email. There's a fun aside, I think, regarding the book of ghost stories included with Moon Mist. I read those stories many times and enjoyed them, but over 20 years later, I happened to pick up a copy of the book Vanishing Cornwall by the famed author Daphne du Maurier from Jamaica Inn, Frenchman's Island, or Frenchman's Creek, etc., which are all books set in Cornwall. Vanishing Cornwall, published in the 1960s, was a cultural guidebook to the region. In her sections on folklore, some of the stories, a haunted apple orchard, a mad priest with a congregation of effigies, etc., sounded so familiar that it took me a few minutes to remember where I'd read them before. And then it blindsided me. Every story in the ghost book from Moon Mist was there, some of them with the exact same phrases. The only original story was the backstory for the castle itself, the White Lady tale, but every other story in the game book was an authentic Cornish ghost legend. It was like a 25-year-old bomb went off in my brain, realizing in that moment that someone at Infocom had had a copy of Vanishing Cornwall and used it to create that little feely ghost story book. While I know Moon Mist is never considered a top-tier Infocom title, I disagree, it will always hold a fond place for me because the genuine folklore included and the spooky atmospheric setting. Anyway, thanks for the podcast and the memories of all the classic games. I had no idea about that at all. That was all news to me.
That's really cool. I love that someone at Infocom went and took the time to do that research and
gave no credit.
Gave no credit. Copy the stories. And yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, good artists, bad artists copy, great artists steal, or something like that. I don't remember.
I said that second.
Okay.
which makes me great.
Let's see.
What do you got?
I got a lot.
Let's see.
Eric Henneke wrote in, said, love your podcast. I've been listening to it quite a bit and going back once again to comfortable old Infocom games. Keep up the great work on the podcast. I was just trying stupid things intentionally, or should I say things I have probably never tried before. I just ran into this and thought I would share. And he sent a screenshot from Zork, I believe. He types, get leaves, taken. He types, toss leaves at me. The game responded, a terrific throw. The pile of leaves hits you squarely in the head. Normally, this wouldn't do much damage, but by incredible mischance, you fall over backwards, trying to duck and break your neck, justice being swift and merciful in the great underground empire. You have died. That was it.
Death by leaves.
Mm-hmm. His final score is -10. So
I know the feeling.
Yeah. Anyway, funny.
Mm-hmm.
Love
mm-hmm.
it.
We had a couple of questions. The second one, I think, is something you can answer, sent by a friend of the show, Giovanni from Florence, mm-hmm. who's written in before. He wrote to ask a couple of questions about digital assistants, like the Amazon one, that device that I don't want to name in case somebody's listening mm-hmm. aloud on speakers.
In our house, we call it Dingus. When you're talking about Dingus. It, but not to it. Dingus.
Okay. Yeah. So one of those digital dingi, which presumably is the plural for dingus. The first question I don't know how to answer, and the second question I think you know how to answer. So first question is, one, looking back, do you believe that at the beginning of the development of these dinguses, anyone was somehow influenced by the techniques Infocom in their parser developed years ago? I don't know. I would have no idea how we would know that.
Yeah, I don't know. I doubt it. I think it's something that probably developed independently, and although some of those... Mm-hmm. I mean, because when you're typing into a text adventure, there's a definite, you know, there's a way you talk to it. You know, you take the leaves, throw the leaves, right? I mean, and that's not how you talk to a dingus, a serier, or
not how you talk to
him. That's true. There's so much a wider array of ways that you might make a request from a personal digital assistant thing. So I don't know, but I doubt it. That's my answer.
We don't know. So, but the second one I think you do know. It says, two, looking forward, how much time until one of these digital assistants will be able to let us play interactive fiction? How good would it be to play by speaking, not writing? Are you aware of any platforms that may offer such pleasures already? We talked about that before, right? There was like a phone or something. You could play Zork by talking to a phone. You mentioned that.
Yeah. In fact, no, years ago, someone did Colossal Cave, like port of Colossal Cave to the Amazon Dingus. It's a skill you can add. And I haven't done that. And I think doing it would probably be painful. But let's see, this port says it was done in December 2016.
There you go.
Yeah, and there's other one.
So it's sort of like a parsley game, are they called? Where like one person pretends to be the parser, like a person, and you play as a group just speaking to them. Right. So I guess it's like that. But if you're like me and don't have a lot of friends, then you can play with your dingus. Yeah, I said play with your dingus. Yeah, I did.
Okay, we're going to get an explicit rating on this episode. Huh.
Depends on the dingus.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I don't think it would be
so hard. Much in life depends on the dingus.
That's true. That is true. Is that it for that one?
That was it for that one.
Okay. Let's see. We have... that one is really good.
Oh, yeah.
Really,
my gosh. I got a lot of email.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. Oh, Drew Cook wrote into us. I was going to talk about Drew's blog anyway. Drew's blog is called Gold Machine Games as Text, Text as Games. I don't think, have we talked about this yet? I don't think we have.
Nope.
I don't listen.
Nope,
to
I
the,
do not think
I
so.
I don't listen to the show, so I don't know what we talked about.
Who does?
Drew writes in, greetings. I am relatively new to your podcast and have been catching up. It's a lot of fun. I enjoy your insights. I am doing an Infocom playthrough and documenting my thoughts. I like to reread Jimmy Maher's stuff and listen to Eaten by Gru for prep/background. I really dislike Journey and think your impressions are dead on. I had kind of a hard time getting it going on Windows Frots. I think those later graphical games are a bit fussy in modern interpreters. Mark Blank had been involved with some great Infocom games, but I think he was most interested in technical matters and innovation. Hence, we got later experiments like Border Zone and Journey. He did a lot of back-end work on Suspended 2, another more successful experiment. Journey, unfortunately, is not a success. I do hope you will enjoy Zork Zero more than I did. It feels rather cynical to me, a last attempt to get a hit via the Zork name. I won't go into detail because you have yet to play it, except, of course, now we have, but I look forward to hearing what you think. I think Plundered Hearts is Infocom's last great game. The back end of the catalog just isn't as satisfying to me. My own write-ups and verbose are verbose and dryly academic. I'm doing a good job of selling it, aren't I? In other words, it's Nietzsche.
Nietzsche.
Just to give you an idea, I have just finished writing about Zork 2, and that was 8,500 words. At this rate, I will probably finish in 2030. And the site is Gold Machine. Games as Text, Text as Game, Text as Games. It's at GOLMAC, like Goal Machine, GOLMAC.org. Drew says, thanks for being such a good resource for fans, new players, and researchers. Thank you, Drew, for the nice letter.
The title, Games Becoming Text, Text Becoming Games, reminds me of Werewolf Bar Mitzvah from 30 Rock. Do you know that?
I've seen it. I've seen 30 Rock, but I don't remember that.
Spooky, scary. It's boys becoming men, men becoming wolves. It makes me giggle. So, you know, I'm at that end of the spectrum.
Excellent.
And other people are writing treaties on Infocom games. Yeah. We all bring what we have to the table.
Carrington's here playing with his dingus.
Dinga. We got a really nice email from Stefan in Germany. It says, here in Germany, there's not many people playing these Infocom games, I guess. Language was definitely a hurdle. Most people know Zork, and that's it. And after your episode 44, we all know Zork's not really a good starting point for these games. So listening to your podcast while replaying these games by myself was meeting an Infocom friend I never had over here in Germany. So thanks for that. That is the sweetest thing to say.
Nice.
I thought that was very nice. Thank you.
Yes.
We have a friend in Germany. We're gonna come over and stay on your couch.
I have started learning a little bit of German on Duolingo
for
no particular reason other than I subscribe to this Atari magazine that's out of Germany, the ABBUC magazine, the Atari Bitbiter User Club magazine, mm-hmm. and I've been subscribed for quite a while. The magazine's entirely in German.
But you've subscribed for quite a while, even though you don't speak German.
Yeah, I look at the pictures and try to suss out the headlines.
I read it for the pictures.
Anyway, so one day I'm just like, I should be able to read. I should learn to. Anyway, so I'm doing Duolingo. Now I can say, this coffee is too hot.
Excellent.
And hello, Mr. Johnson. I'm sorry.
Everybody in Germany is named Mr. Johnson, so that'll be very helpful.
Right.
Yeah. Just walk around. So, hello, Mr. Johnson.
Anyway, I can complain about the temperature of coffee to Mr. Johnson.
In German.
Yes. Anyway, I don't know if I will ever get good at German, but I'm just having fun with that.
That's cool.
All right. Now we get to the part of the mail where people suggest what we should and should not do.
Yes,
we
have
several of these. I'm going to start with an easy one from Steve, who says, "You gotta believe me, Zork Grand Inquisitor is a really fun game. It will not annoy you as the previous Zork games mostly have. I have played Nemesis as well. It is definitely less enjoyable and dark. Zork Grand Inquisitor is more humorous and light." That's what Steve says about that.
Do we have to believe you, Steve? Sounds suspicious. Sounds suspiciously like a Zork lover.
Steve, you're a sussy baka.
We got a great email from Audifa, and she wrote in to say, in fact, I'm bringing this up because I think she was the first person to recommend Counterfeit Monkey, and I have been crediting our friend Mark, mm-hmm. and maybe I can steal all that credit back. Oh, that lovely credit. I can get it all for myself. So Audifa wrote in to say, "I'm so happy you guys are continuing the podcast. Top of my head, modern IF recommendations. Counterfeit Monkey, see below, she recommended it back in 2019. Violet, Anchorhead, Lost Pig, Hayden Lands, The Impossible Bottle, 9:05, The Edifice, which is said to be one amazing puzzle, but otherwise just okay, and Photopia. I am giddy. More Eaten by Gru. Woo.
Woo.
That's exciting. But what's also woo-worthy is back on Monday, January 7th, 2019 at 10:55 a.m. my local time, we got a letter saying, "Kevin and Carrington, if you liked the tea remover puzzle in Leather Goddesses of Phobos, you should check out Counterfeit Monkey by Emily Short. It's full of similar wordplay." Mark? Give me back my credit. All the credit comes back. I think that might have been the first time that was recommended to us.
Excellent.
Maybe. I don't know. Whatever.
Well, all right. Hold on. Let me search my email. Now I'm going to search all of my email for the words Counterfeit Monkey. Maybe we'll find an email.
Wait, you keep your email?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I am an email deleter.
Oh, no. I have email going back to just, you know, prehistory.
Email is a burden. I love deleting email. I love like the whole select all, delete. Some of it was read, some of it wasn't read. It's always it's freeing. It's like a burden lifts off me. Email is all a burden.
So
email from you, dear listeners. Your email is good.
What was the date on that? What was the date on that email that you just read?
It was January 7th, 2019 at 10:55
a.m. I've got that beat by 11 months.
Come on.
No, from Karen Hales, who said, let's see, "Your diversion to Thimbleweed Park was fun. I hope you might occasionally feel inspired towards other interludes." And then she says, "Perhaps an Infocom comparable large text adventure from the IS hobbyist community. I have a soft spot for wordplay games and love Emily Short's Counterfeit Monkey."
Ooh, we have a new winner. Audifa, you're dead to me. No.
It's all about Karen Hales now.
Well, that's exciting.
This is the podcast
good recommendations where we've ignored for years.
This is the podcast where you can wait 4 years to hear your email read.
But then we will finally give you credit.
But then only
maybe only for a short period.
Right, and only to win an argument.
only to win an argument that I'm making up in my mind. We got another recommendation, one from Jeffrey, wrote in to say, I know you presumably deliberately didn't frame the what should we do now question as a listener referendum, but I encourage you to, instead of going into the world of the IF comp, to instead cover those games from Infocom contemporaries that otherwise go overlooked. Going to the Scott Adams and Sierra titles might feel like a step backward, but there are plenty of titles that at least tried to compete on equal footing. Things like the Synapse games, written in a system literally called Better Than Zork, the games from Infocom contemporaries in non-Infocom settings, like Berlin's Task Times and Tonetown, and so forth. IF Comp is such a different world of different taste makers. Mm-hmm. It's not a land of grues. Mm-hmm. So we have been well warned.
We have. I have a related tweet from Dan Fabulish. Dan. I want to say fabulous when I see his last name, but that's probably not how you say it.
It's how I say it.
Dan said,
so you got that going for you now, Dan.
Yeah. I just finished listening to the Zork Zero podcast, and I now understand your system to play every IF comp winner. But hear me out. I think you actually want to play every Xizzy Award winner instead.
I remember this tweet. Mm-hmm. Yes, this came in and I thought was well argued.
Mm-hmm. He says, IF comp is a...
Wait, how do you pronounce it?
I've always said Xizzy.
See, this is why I was nervous about playing these things. We'll have to pronounce that word, and I really think I'm not going to get it right.
Yeah, that's the magic word in some games.
Or whatever. Yeah, it's a magic word that you can type in Infocom games. It's, what is it?
XYZY.
That was very inclusive. I totally accepted that's how it was. I did.
Now, the Canadians, I'm sorry, the Canadians would spell it XYZZY.
Yes, we would. No, first of all, we do YYZ. It's the only time we say Z because Rush, but, and maybe ZZ Top. All the rest are Zeds.
Let's see.
Actually, up here we don't say ZZ Top. We pronounce it the way it's supposed to be, which is stop. It's like a bee telling you to cease. Stop.
So I just listened to it on Wikipedia, and the guy just says Zizzy.
Zizzy. That would have been my guess. Yeah. Is Zizzy.
Xizzy.
We are in an email generation system at the moment. We are absolutely getting feedback on this one.
But hear me out. I think you actually want to play every Xizzy award winner instead. IF Comp is a specific game jam competition that runs once a year, requiring competitors to submit new games that release to the public at the start of IF Comp. The Xizzy Awards go to the best game of the year, whether they were entered in IF Comp or not. The IF Comp winner is usually nominated for the Xizzy Best Game Award, but often doesn't win. For example, in 1998, Fotopia won IF Comp and was nominated for Xizzy's Best Game, but Spider and Web by Andrew Plotkin won. Both games are delightful. In 1996, if you're playing the Xizzy Award winner, you will play So Far, but if you play the IF Comp Award winner, you'll play The Meteor, The Stone, and A Long Glass of Sherbet. I think you'll prefer So Far, Dan says. But regardless, if you only play winners, you'll miss some great games, including Hidden Lands and Anchorhead, neither of which even participated in IF Comp and didn't win in Xizzy in their respective years. And then he sends us a convenient list of the Xizzy Award winners. So this is complicated, Carrington.
Mm-hmm. It is complicated. Modern IF is very difficult.
Yes.
It's a weird world. It's not a world of grues, no, as we were warned.
No.
I don't know. I thought that was well argued, though. So if we did the, if we just pronounce it differently every time, we'll be able to annoy so
many
people.
The dingus. We'll just call it dingus.
Right. It appeals to me, the idea that I'm just going to mispronounce that every time. Oh, dear listener, what are you in for? But if we play those winners instead, maybe that's a, I don't know. I just want to play games, man.
Right.
But then the ones that win IF Comp seem to get nominated for the Xizzy Awards, and then if they're best, I guess they bubble. What does best even mean?
Right.
And it's like you said, Hayden Lands, is everyone talks about Fotopia and Hayden Lands, and if they didn't win anything, then we don't want to miss those ones.
Right.
I don't know. I just want to play some games.
I do too, and I want to play good games. And honestly, I mean, it's nice to have a pathway to go on, so it doesn't feel like completely random, you know? I mean,
and I don't want to have to dig through a thing and make up a game and vote for it every single time. I just want to say, what's the next one on the list?
Right, exactly.
It's easier.
That is easier. However, but on another, like, I do want to play Counterfeit Monkey, because apparently it's so many people have
Which one did Counterfeit
it.
Monkey
But
win?
It won Igzizzy in 2012, so we're not going to play it for a long time if we strictly stick to the pathway laid before us. So
we could play the Zizzy Award winners alphabetically. Counterfeit Monkey would be earlier.
Okay, our next game will be Ah,
and I apologize for having played Uncle What's His Name's Will, because that's a
I don't know what we're
doing. Okay, what do you suggest, listeners? You haven't helped us at all. All you've done is muddy the waters.
That's right. And further, and while we're talking about people telling us what to do, Guillaume writes in,
Guillaume
says, I can't overstate how happy I am you're going to cover more recent interactive fiction titles. I've listened to all your episodes and greatly enjoy them, but my love for interactive fiction lays less with old and sometimes clunky games that pioneered the medium, and more with recent games that are much, much less punishing to play, but are still beautiful examples of the power of this particular format.
Less punishing to play, he says, in the episode where we're going to talk about change in the weather.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to hearing you what you think about some of my favorite games like Violet or Slouching Towards Bedlam.
Oh, good name. Good title right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. And then quickly, Charles Mangan also wrote in about a blog post. Oh, about a lost mainframe game that was found.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, it was found in 2015.
From like 1974 or something.
Yeah, the game was from 1974. I guess it was the blog post about it being found was from 2015, but I think I missed it. And Charles wrote to us about it in 2021. But basically, the blog post says, Wander was probably the first computer game that is recognizable as what came to be known as a text adventure. But it's a tool, it seems to have been designed as a tool to allows users to create non-deterministic fantasy stories on their own. It was thought to be lost, presumably languishing on one or more of the slowly decaying tape reels of mainframe history. But then it was recovered. That's the short answer. If you want the full thing, we'll put the link to this blog post in the thing. But you can play it, and it's an old text adventure, you know, where these guys type in take credit card and go north and inventory. And so, I mean, that seems like a text adventure to me. So neat.
There was also, I guess, on Google, there's a hidden text adventure. Did you hear about that? Bubbled up in January.
I don't think I know about that.
Yeah. So there's like, if you go to Google, there's a keyboard.
How do I do that?
Sure. You do the inspector tool, which would be like Control Shift J or Command Option I on a Mac. And
Command Option
in the inspect
I.
element, you have to type like yes to play it. You got to go to, what do you got to go to? I don't remember. I should have Googled it before finding it, because it was like a month ago people talking about it. But there's like a secret text adventure. When you look at the code on Google.com, like just the search site, if you look in the code, you inspect her, and there's a fail to load on a thing where you can say no, and there's a comment out yes or whatever, and you say no, I want to uncomment that, and bingo, you're now playing a text adventure. There's like a hidden text adventure in Google.
Interesting.
That wasn't helpful, I'm sure, but I'll find a way. I'll find info and links, and we'll stick it in the show.
Open there's a hidden google.com in Chrome, search for text adventure without the quotes. Okay, first of all, I use Safari most of the time, so that's my first problem. Open the JavaScript Developer Console by hitting Command-Option-J on a Mac or Shift-Option-J on Windows. You should see a prompt asking would you like to play a game? Type yes and push enter, and the game will start. Really? Fun.
Yeah. Neat. Totally fun. So I play that one too. Play all the games.
Fun.
All the games. Speaking of which, my girlfriend and I are totally hooked on these things called unlocked games.
We like
escape rooms and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And they're like escape rooms in a box, but it's card based. So it's an unlock series by a company in France. And each box comes with three like escape rooms, basically. But it's just cards, and on the card, if you ever see a number, then you pull the card from that number, and it's be another picture or hidden, and tools, and you can combine the different things. And it's the most like an escape room experience that I've ever played as a home thing. And we're just hooked on them. We're chewing through these things, and we're going to be done with them all very soon. And I'll be sad there'll be no more.
Oh, so it's not. It's a finite number of puzzles. It's
yeah, you
not...
get three. Yeah, you mm-hmm. really play it once, and then you know all the puzzles. Mm-hmm. So when you buy one of these game boxes, you'll get three games. But oh, we go through all three in an evening, and there's only like six boxes or whatever. We're almost done them all, but they're great. So if you like escape rooms, highly recommend the unlock boxes. They're unbelievably good.
Nice.
Anyway, totally separate. So hidden text adventures, old text adventures, new text adventures. So much to play, so little time, and none of this helps us pick a path of what to play. It's so much easier when you said IF comp winners.
Yeah.
That was such a simple future we had in front of us.
Right.
Just like play them in order. Way to go, listeners. You ruined everything.
Rondat made it hard. Yeah. Okay. Well, but we don't have to decide right
now. Dave wrote in by email to say, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll do one
more. Let's
do it. I've been listening to the pre-spoiler latest podcast, and I was scared you're going to end it. What a feeling of relief and joy to hear you're going to continue. I've been less interested in modern text adventures, but I've nonetheless become interested because I've warmed to you over the series of pods.
Aww.
So as you said, I came for the Infocom, and I'm staying for the rest. Have fun, and thanks again very much. See, that was pleasant and didn't make things more difficult.
Did not.
Dave, new favorite listener.
And same as me. I came for the Infocom. I'm staying mm-hmm. for the rest.
Yeah. I came for the K. I'm here for the
K. Nice. Yeah.
So we played games. So we talked about the games we did play?
Yes.
Or do you have more feedback?
No, that's good. No, that's good. I think we are pretty much caught up on everything that I intend to read. So we're good. I'm marking that.
We played a game with a little adorable fox in it.
Okay, first of all, we should just state that we played two games. We're going to talk about them both.
We played two games. One took way longer than the other.
Yeah. We said last episode we were going to play A Change in the Weather, and we did. And then we decided that it was, I mean, so much of a smaller game than any Infocom game. So we decided to play the other IF comp winner for that year, which was Uncle Zebulon's Will. So in this episode, we Uncle Zebulon will be talking about about both A Change in the Weather and Uncle Zebulon's.
Oh, we've never done two episodes before. So we got to do pre-spoiler for both and then post-spoiler for both.
I don't know. Maybe we'll just bundle all the spoilers at the end.
Okay.
I don't know if there's any spoilers for Change in the Weather.
If we talked about how to win.
Okay. Well, whatever. Let's see.
Let's see how it goes.
Okay. Do you want to do two short episodes? I mean, not that this is short.
No,
but
I want to roll on and do both episodes, both shows in this podcast, baby.
All right. Cool.
Uncle Zebulon.
Okay. So go ahead. I'm sorry, I interrupted you. We're going to talk about Change in the Weather.
So we played A Change in the Weather by Andrew Plotkin. Relatively famous name in modern IF, mm-hmm. has made tons of games, won awards, has contributed to IF languages, contributes a lot to the community, helps host the Boston IF meeting thing that we sometimes attend, mm-hmm. Answers questions, but he's a big name in modern IF. So it's neat to kick this off with the Infocom of modern IF. Andrew goes by Zarf. Seems like a really nice guy. I've never met him in real life. I think you have, but seems like a swell fellow from the Boston stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So and now we're gonna criticize his game.
Yeah, pick it apart. This is the first time that we have done an episode about a game by somebody that we know, you know. I mean, we have to you know, in a couple of weeks there'll be the Boston IF meeting and he's going to be on Zoom and I'm going to have to look him in the eye, so to speak.
Hey, remember when we said your game sucked? No, of course we're not going to say it. And it doesn't anyway.
So Change in the Weather was
now you know how I feel every time I say anything critical about the Infocom things.
Yeah.
We don't know them.
I don't want to, no, you're right.
I'm a Canadian. I feel bad even if I don't know the person. That's called empathy. We have it up here in our country.
Well, ship some of that down. Can't get it because of supply chain issues. Sorry.
It's like a couch. Okay, you Canadians, you can just go sit on your comfy empathy for a while. You get no couches.
So change.
Welcome to the show, folks.
So Change in the Weather won the IF comp in 1995. Mm-hmm. Andrew programmed it in the fancy new language of Inform.
Ooh.
It was freeware, and it was interesting to see in the IF database, the IFDB, it says forgiveness rating cruel.
And I think that's cruel. His own ratings, right? Like of the many things Andrews invented, I think he came up with the cruelty scale
yes.
that people rate these things by, right? So like that's his thing. And in his own rating, he's like, yeah, this game is cruel. And it's a neat idea because the cruelty scale is kind of like, it's not just is the game hard, it's more about like how you could get stuck in a game and how you could die in a game and whether or not that's kind of quote unquote fair. So like a not cruel game, it doesn't mean you can't die, or maybe you can't, like maybe it's like impossible to die. But like, if you're going to die, you'll be warned first, or there'll be like there's an example I think he gives of like, say there's a bridge, and if you cross the bridge let's say you need a key when you cross the bridge to get to a door. And if you cross the bridge immediately collapses. And now you're on the other side of the bridge and you don't have the key you want. And like, too bad for you, I guess your game is over. And that's a cruel thing. You might come to the bridge and there's a warning saying, hey, this bridge collapses, but you can still cross the bridge, or there's something that tells you maybe it's going to collapse and it collapses and you're stuck and you're in an unwinnable position and you don't really realize it, but you were kind of warned ahead and that's like less cruel. But if you come to it and it like won't let you cross without the key, or it doesn't collapse unless you have the key or whatever, then that's less cruel. Like there's ways games can be cruel or not cruel, not just in killing you. So Walking Dead states. It's an interesting way to kind of rate a game. And he rates this game as cruel. Right. And I agree with that rating. This game is very hard.
I think
the last part of the game is very hard.
I think it's also an interesting way. It's really useful knowledge, I think, to have going into a game. It's like, how paranoid do I need to be about saving? I mean, the lowest rating is merciful. You cannot die. You cannot get stuck. The game is always beatable. No progress can get lost. Then there's polite, and there's tough, there's nasty, and there's cruel. But I mean, if you go into a game knowing it's merciful or polite, then you're like, okay, you don't have to, you know, save the game all the time. You're like worried, like, oh, if I drink this potion, am I gonna, you know, need it later or whatever.
Because I'm constantly worried about being in a state where I've lost the game and I don't know it. Like, that's my... Even through the Infocom games, I was constantly saving, keeping multiple saves. That's why I bug Mark about the fact that, like, when I'm playing Pitch Dark, you only get 5 save slots. I'm like, I need way more than 5 saves. I need 50 saves. Yeah. So I'm always afraid that games are cruel. So it'd be nice to know in advance that it's not. This is a polite game, or this is a merciful game.
Right.
I can like, kind of just relax and play it.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
So how did you play it? And what thingy?
I played it using Lectrote, which is a text adventure
parser.
Constructed by somebody named Andrew Plotkin. He's everywhere, folks. He's everywhere. We may have to break up Andrew as a monopoly. So it's what they call a portable IF interpreter app.
I guess the parser is the part of the program.
So this is an interpreter. I thought I'd play it in that because it's his. I'm like, oh, sure. Let's just combine them.
Andrew all the time.
Yeah.
Okay. I did the same.
Did you? Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
How did you know about Lectrote?
I think we've talked about it a long time ago. I already had it installed. Yeah. Okay, that's how I played it. So this is a game in which, is there an official description? I think there is. Let's read that. We usually, you know, can't read the back of the box, but we can say that IFDB says, walking away from a picnic, you are suddenly caught in a country storm. You must protect a bridge from being destroyed. An ultra-linear game. That's it.
Ultra-linear.
Linear.
Ultra-linear game. Okay, yes. Yes, it is. Because it really is, you're working your way through a thing. And like, this is what you're doing. The next. Now you're dealing with the shovel. Now you're dealing with the rain. Now you. Yeah, okay, yes. Yeah. Super linear game. Yes, agree. And hard. Cruel. I agree with the cruel.
So why is it so cruel?
Because you can die. You can die easy. And I would play this game and it would end and I wouldn't be dead. Like, it's a hard game to describe. Like, you're kind of at this picnic and you take off from your friends and you're going to hang out. And then my difficulty was for the longest time, I wasn't sure what I was supposed to be doing. Like, am I supposed to be doing a thing? Because I'm hanging out. This rain is coming. Am I supposed to am I supposed to do something? But it's a realistic game. Like, this is just a game where you are out and, like, it's just, you're walking around and there's rain.
In that it's a game where I'm uncomfortable at a party and I wander away. Yes, very realistic.
And it's a game that takes place in real life. And I don't know about you, but I've actually spent some time in real life. And I know the feeling of going, like, I don't know, am I supposed to be doing something? Is there a goal? So maybe I shouldn't be judging it for the fact that often I wouldn't know what I was supposed to do next, because that's life, baby. So unlike a Zork game or something similar, where I'm so used to we're playing these games and, like, okay, there's two doors and they both have keyholes. I now know what I'm doing is looking for keys. This was like, okay, some rain is coming and I'm sleeping in a cave and I do have a bit of a shovel now. Am I supposed to be doing something? Like, what is the thing? Oh, here's a shed. And, like, and I was never sure for the longest time. I wasn't sure. Like, I would, the game would end and I wouldn't be dead, but the ending message would say something like, things could have gone better.
Yeah.
And I would be like, is that just like that's, a general ennui
that's
thing?
That's just like life, like, too, man.
Maybe that's just how this game ends. Like, it doesn't mean I didn't find the right. Like, maybe that's just this is a game where you just play and, you know, things could have gone better. Welcome to Andrew's mindset or something, right? I didn't know. And so I went online and I cheated. I looked, I think on the IF comp page, it had a thing called a Club Floyd transcript.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen one of those?
No, I don't know what that is.
This was news to me. I think it was Club Floyd. I'm going to Google while I talk. So Club Floyd, clearly being a reference to
the robot,
yeah. Right, that everybody likes. Mm-hmm. So on IF Comp, the IF Comp page for this game is where I downloaded the Z5 file,
mm-hmm.
So I could drag it on the Electrode, and that's how I played this game. On that page, I think it had a link to a walkthrough or something, but I didn't want to look at a walkthrough. But then there was a Club Floyd transcript. So I'm like, oh, what is that? So I clicked on that. And I guess Club Floyd is a thing where people can play text adventures together. So you join remotely. It's like having like a little, it's like a BBS. It's like, I'm old enough to use the word BBS. It's a BBS. It's with the kids today. Go mm-hmm. to a chat room. And one person's like controlling the what's going to be typed to the parser, and everyone else is like making suggestions or whatever. So I kind of glanced at it. I said, oh, look, they're playing the game I'm currently playing. So I scrolled way down. I'm like, yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff I didn't see. Oh, that's a better ending. Okay, I am supposed to be doing more things. So that's what told me I had to do more stuff, and also taught me about Club Floyd transcripts.
So, yeah, I mean...
But what about you? Like, were you always clear what you're supposed to do? I, for the longest time, I wasn't sure what I was supposed to do at the end.
I mean, I figured out about, like, the cave.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, and then the bridge kept getting washed away.
Like, wash out. Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And so it said, sure, it said things could have gotten better or whatever. And I was just like, okay, well, that shouldn't happen. Maybe I'm supposed to go back over the bridge. And it actually didn't want me to do that either, but... Yeah,
stop the bridge from getting washed out, which ended up being like the thing
right.
I worked on at the
yeah.
end of this.
So,
stop
yeah,
that
I was,
bridge from
I
getting
was,
washed out.
I had some idea, and then there was a couple of, there was a shed that I couldn't get into, so I figured that probably had something to do with something. So I felt like I sort of knew what to do, and then I lucked into something about the fox that to.
Cute fox, right?
I liked that NPC.
Adorable yeah. NPC, like a really, really good one. It,
yeah.
Like you can throw things like and run around and then look up at you and make sure you didn't see it do it. Like so adorable.
Yeah.
Really good at like high quality NPC.
Yeah.
Really like the fox.
But this game, I mean, it is cruel. The basically you have to do some stuff. I mean, we've already said you've got to keep the bridge from getting washed away.
Right.
That was right in the thing.
I don't think that's much of a spoiler because that's to turns out to be the goal of the game.
Right.
Although I didn't know that for the longest time.
And it was right there on the IFDB page, right? First thing you said.
Right.
But the
fact that I don't read very well might have a lot to do with how difficult I find these games.
The puzzles are very specific, and I think the hard part about this game is that the timing is tight.
Timing.
The
yeah.
timing.
Oh,
I mean,
well put. Yeah, it's tightly timed game. Yeah, well put.
Yeah.
That's exactly.
It's
right.
Like it's like you're in a play and you've got to be on your mark exactly at the right time to do the thing and then hit your next spot before the beam of light hits the stage. I mean, you've got it's and so the game it's a learn by death or learn by losing sort of situation.
Learn by washouts. Yeah.
Yeah. Where you've just got to like be at the right place at the right time, do the thing, grab the next object, do the next thing. And it's if you know what you're doing, I mean, once you know how to do it, it's a short game. I mean, it's like a 20 move game or something.
Right.
But it took me hours to get there.
15 moves you have to do in the exact order.
Right.
But we had this, we did encounter this sort of thing in a smaller way at the end of like Enchanter or whatever, where you have to go, okay, you're going to do the big boss fight. You're going to have to cast 3 spells, the right spell in the right order. Bing, bing, bing. You've got 4 moves and that's what you have to do for those 4 moves. Mm-hmm. But this is more like the last half of the game. It's like, okay, you're actually going to take, you know, 45 moves, but the last 21 have to be these to win. It is very tightly timed.
Yeah.
And so, but that's the puzzle, is figure out what are the things I'm supposed to do and get yourself a little closer to that win. So I didn't mind that at all. I just found it very difficult.
Right. Yeah.
So I restarted a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of getting told things could have gone better. I was told very often things I restart a lot. But that is the nature of the game. Like you say, once you know, you can finish it in a couple hours. Right. But it actually took me many play times. Mm-hmm. I had to go back to it.
And ultimately, I had to cheat to like figure out how to do some of those ending moves. Did you do it without? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, I had to cheat.
Yeah.
But I had to cheat on Infocom games, and this is like a cruel modern game, so I'm not. Of course I had to cheat. Whatever, that's what I do.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
No, it's fine. There's nothing wrong. I was just asking how big a cheater you are. As big a cheater as me. That's all. That's fine. I we've lost Carrie.
We have lost me. I'm back. I'm cheating back.
I liked the writing style. I liked
he's a good writer.
The setting of the scene, it felt like a poem. It felt like a meditation, you know?
Totally. A bunch of my notes talk about that. He writes prose like it's poetry, like it flows. He's a very good writer. Mm-hmm. Like just in the description of the sunset, description of things, like it's really nice. And you can see how the modern game, even one done in Infocom, seemed to have a bit more space. You can make this small game, but put a lot of words in it, a lot of description. Didn't like sometimes you play the old Infocom games, it feels like they're struggling to make the description fit the 8 words they're allowed to use. So like, and this really felt like it had a breathing room to just write nice, long, luxurious sentences. Mm-hmm. And just maybe that's also a factor of the fact that it's a small map and it's a relatively small game. But it's nicely written and the prose just flows and things. So really enjoyed that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
A lot.
Yeah. It's, I think I'm still just getting used to. We've only played 2 non-Infocom games now. I'm getting used to...
Wait, what was our other one?
Uncle Zebulon's Will.
Oh, I see. Okay, I thought maybe before this. I'm like,
sorry.
I did?
Yeah.
What did I... Yes. This is maybe the first modern IF game I've ever played.
Hmm.
I think so.
Wow.
I haven't played any of this stuff.
Oh, wow. So it's... I'm still getting... I've played some, and we'll play... I mean, I can't wait to show you Violet and stuff, but... I just feel like we're... After... doing so many Infocom now, like into this other world of like stuff written by other people. And the writing styles are going to be different and the puzzle types are going to be different. And, you know, I don't know. I do not mean to disparage either of these games that we played in any way. It's not a bad thing. But I feel like we've just read like the entirety of the classics, you know, and now we're reading fanfic.
You know? Right, yes.
And it's just different, you know. It's just a different, I don't know, it's going to take a minute to get used to, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, very, very different. This was a different voice than we have encountered in any of the games we played so far, so which is also refreshing. So I dug that. There weren't a ton of puzzles in this. There's one involving a shovel that I think I got to talk about after Spoiler Fence.
Okay.
That is super simple, but I really liked.
Mm-hmm.
And one involving a fox that I didn't like. And then the last half of the game is basically one big puzzle. Stop the bridge, let it go, figure out the things you can do. So it's like one very intricate puzzle at the end that you've built. Like, get ready. Okay, here comes the puzzle.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know what else I have to say pre-spoiler.
Yeah, me neither.
Would you recommend this game? Would you recommend this game for people who have never played a modern...
No, this game is
too...
Was
this the right game for us to start with?
Oof. Well, for having done... After you've completed all the Infocom games, sure, go ahead and play this one.
Right.
I don't think this.
If this was somebody's first text adventure ever, it might be their last text adventure ever.
I think so.
Because it'd be like impossible.
Yeah.
This game was really hard.
Yeah. This was a very small, very tough game. But we've been conditioning for it for years now.
It was said to be a cruel game. Like, it's fair to put out a tough game and say, this isn't. I think Andrew's written another game. I remember reading about that is like intentionally designed to be a first game. Here's a game for people that have never played IF. Totally fair to do that. It's also totally fair to say, here's a game that is punishingly difficult because some people want to play a punishingly difficult game. Like, you got to have those things out there. So, so it's probably just too hard for me.
I mean, I'm glad I played it. I would recommend it. I would recommend it, but not as the first game. No. But I loved his writing style. I love the fox.
Fox is one of my favorite NPCs so far. Like, there's not a ton of NPCs in Infocom games. There's Floyd, and there's a dolphin, a turtle, a something in Trinity. What was the thing that I really liked that I can't remember what it is? But there's only a few, and they're really good. Mm-hmm. But this fox, which doesn't do a ton, but just the way the fox is described just made me just... I loved this fox. I love how cute... This fox was like the cutest in my mind. Mm-hmm. So really good description of this NPC because I had a real soft spot for it.
So. Nice. Okay. I think I'm done with changing the weather. Do you want to move on to Uncle Zebulon's will?
Let's do it. Let's do some non-spoiler will reading.
And then we'll go back and do spoilers for both at the very, very end.
I like it.
Okay, so Uncle Zebulon's Will was the other first place winner of the Exizzy, of the IF Comp. I'm confusing myself.
It's pronounced ch-ch-ch-ch.
Of the IF Comp in 1995. It is by a person named Mangus Olson, a name
I do not know.
I'm not familiar with that name. Also freeware. It was written in a development system called TADS 2.
But plays the same. Both of these games play like Infocom games.
Yes.
Like, you open it up, it was all text, it would describe the thing, have a little prompt, and you'd say, like, take credit card. And it would just, like, so they were the same sort of game. So one's in Inform, one's in TADS. The old ones we played were in the ZIL thing or whatever, but they all play the same. Like, these all play like Infocom games. In case nobody's playing, I wasn't 100% sure what we were going to get. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's a non-parser. Oh, what is it? There's another text adventure thing, tool that is used that makes a very different kind of game, and it's
like a choose your own adventure type game, right?
Those
exist out there.
Yeah. Right. I've read a book about it. I'm sorry, I can't remember right now, but we'll get to them. I'm sure. But it's a very different kind of game. But yeah, this is basically, you know, was it programmed in C or Pascal? It doesn't matter. It's going to do the same thing, you know. So. So anyway, I'm just saying.
And I'm pretty sure I played this in Lectrode as well, or Lectrode.
I played this one. I think I tried to open it in Lectrode, and it didn't work. It didn't like it.
Oh, maybe I'm wrong then.
So I just played it in the web browser, just right from the IFDB page. I just said,
"Oh, I'd be afraid to do that." It's a very short game. This is simpler, much shorter game.
Yes.
But I wouldn't have known that necessarily going in.
Right.
That'd be okay to play in the browser. But yeah, you can play this. You can play this one.
I played it in browser. It was, you could save. You could restore games. It was what, and I figured whatever, I could always restart.
The modern world is very exciting.
It's amazing.
Speaking of which, I read a thing recently. Like, Apple just came out with a new. For people in the future, it's currently March of 2022, crazy future year. And somebody's saying, like, Apple just came out with a refreshed iPhone SE model. I know people in the future are laughing, they have phones still. They didn't have chips in their brains. Whatever, people. We're doing our best. We've still got leeches. So, and they said the next edition of this is going to probably drop the button in the front because all the rest of their phones have dropped the button. But that won't be till the next rendition, which will probably come out in 2024 or 2025. And I was like, that's it. We're in the future. How can it be the next phone is in 2020? 2025 can't be a real year that people are in.
No.
That's a crazy future jetpack.
There's no guarantee we're going to make it there at the rate we're going.
I'm
going
to be living in jetpack Mars town by then. Like, there's no way I'm living here.
Still going to have that same crappy couch behind you.
It's shipping delays, man. Shipping delays in Jetpack Marstown. Anyway, crazy. 2025 is, people are talking about it like it can possibly ever be a real thing.
No,
come on,
not real.
I was born in the 1900s, man. So anyway, Uncle Zebulon, he's dead.
Uncle Zebulon, he's dead, and his will stipulates
Zeb's dead, baby. Zeb's dead.
His will stipulates that you can go into his house and you can take one thing, and that is your bequeathment, is you, mm-hmm. you get the one thing, and so you get to go in there and look through his garbage and, you know, take his chopper,
because the rest of the family has picked through things.
Rides Zip's chopper right out of there.
So the house is guarded by a demon. Mm-hmm. So you show up at the house, there's a demon who says, you're only going to get like one thing out of this house, because, you know, it's an adventure game. And the family's already been there and picked through it. And it's like, go in. But you know, there was always these rumors of like, Uncle Zeb always had tons of money or access to things. He was a scientist, yeah, like something else is going to happen.
A special relationship with Zeb, and just there's something special there with between you two.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Hollywood hijinks vibes, right?
My notes say the exact same thing. It absolutely reminds me of Hollywood hijinks. Very Hollywood. And I mean that as a compliment. Mm-hmm. I love Hollywood hijinks. And this is my sort of game. Like, this was fun. Go in, there's puzzles, it's funny, Hollywood hijinks style.
Yeah.
I dug it.
Yeah. To me, this felt like Hollywood hijinks micro version, you know, just like
big time. It's like the butterfly game we played, this mini Zork game, but it's like a mini Hollywood hijinks.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you go in there and you look through his little house and you find the secrets, and you know, Zebulon was into some magic and alchemy, and he did some stuff, and you get to figure it out.
Yep.
And you know,
there's puzzles, not a ton of puzzles. There's like five puzzles or so, but they're fun ones, and a weird hologram thing, and like just like it's neat, and it's exactly the sort of thing you get from like a straight ahead Infocom type game where you've got stuff, maybe you can combine them, you got to try to get things from one location to another location, and it's a little, there's something in your way from doing that, you're only allowed to take one thing out of the house, but you need to take more things out of the house, how will you do that? And like it's not particularly difficult. I think I solved it in, I don't know, less than 2 hours, I'm sure, in one setting. It's not a hard game, but fun. Highly recommend it. I really like it. I can see why this would be a crowd pleaser and a winner.
Would this be a good first game?
Yeah, definitely. It's not super hard, but it's, you know, tricky. Mm-hmm. Like, it's got puzzles. You have to really think it through, but they're the kind of puzzles you'd encounter in lots of, you know, Infocom type games. It's that kind of puzzle. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely could be somebody's first game. Yeah. Yes, definitely.
Something that a feature I liked about, and this might be just a feature of Tad's, or it might be something that Mangus Olsen wrote, but I like the fact when you type score, it said your score, and also you visited 8 of this game's 12 rooms, and it really gave a sense of how far along you are, and I could imagine that feature, if you were playing Zork 3 or something, you know, it would be nice to know. You visited 20 of this game's 18 billion rooms.
Right. There might be a reason why they don't tell you. Right. You visited 20 rooms and you should just leave it at that. Don't ask me more questions.
Right. Yeah. Anyway, it was a little feature that I enjoyed. I thought he did a nice job of world building. Some little notes written by the uncle that steer things, I thought, sometimes a little ham-fistedly, but you know, it I saw what he was trying to do, and I appreciated it, and
and it's a good setting. It's like the appropriate setting for a text adventure. There's a will, you got it, you know, there's something else going on here, there's a demon guarding the door, mm-hmm. and like there's some magic stuff, but yeah, this is well-trod text adventure landscape, and I was very comfortable in it, so I liked that the pieces, I'd have stuff, I'm like, okay, I've got a mirror, I've got a wand, I've got a coin, you've got things. We go, like, I know there's going to be a way to use these together or do things. Like, you can feel the puzzles itching at you. Like, mm-hmm. so it's good objects that really lend themselves to be used in interesting ways, and a neat central mechanism to get stuff out of the house, which we'll have to talk about past the spoiler fence, but well implemented. So I dug that, and I even tried to do some stuff that might put me in a no-win situation just to see what would happen after saving, and it didn't. So I don't know whether it was just because of Tad's or because the author anticipated that and was looking out for me. So it was good. I liked it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, I have some weird complaints about some of the puzzles and things you can't do, but those I'll have to wait for after the spoiler fence too, though.
Okay. Carrington has complaints.
I dug it.
I did too.
Well, small things.
Yeah. I feel like I mean, this don't feel like there's a lot I can say without spoiling, but it was a fun little game, and I'm glad I played it, and
it's like a little bite-sized game, but it's well done. Mm-hmm. and I really liked it. I liked the setting. I felt accomplishment when I solved it. I found the last puzzle remarkably easy. I'm like, this isn't even really a puzzle. Like, what else am I going to do? But like, I like the journey of the game. Like, it's one of those things where I'm like, yeah, that was fun. I played that and I came away going, yeah, that was good. Not super difficult, not super taxing, but I liked it. I highly recommend it. Mm-hmm. I can see why it won. I would vote for this.
Yeah.
I assume. I don't know what the other entries were like, but I liked it a lot.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we got to pick what we're going to do next.
We do.
Jump into spoilers.
I have an idea, and
I like it.
Great.
Because I have no ideas. I don't know what we
should All right.
Do.
So this basically is just punting our problem down the field a little bit without
that
actually
solves
solving.
Everything.
Does it for now, for the moment? All right. So these were the 1995 IF Comp winners, right?
Yes, that we just played.
And
yes.
We've talked about the Xizzies and whatever. But the Xizzy games awards didn't start till 1997.
Aha!
So I say we play the IF Comp 1996 winner.
1996. I like it. And then people can write in and with more things to muddle.
And then in 97, maybe we do both IF Comp and Xizzy. Maybe. I don't know. But all I know is Xizzy doesn't exist yet. So let's just play the IF Comp 1996 winner.
I like it.
Which is called The Meteor, The Stone, and A Long Glass of Sherbet.
A long glass of sherbet is a weird phrase, sherbet. But okay.
And the intro things about it says, and I know nothing about it, it's by Graham Nelson, which is a name I recognize from the IF Interactive Fiction Modern Community.
Yeah.
Another day wasted as a guest of the Empress, a wretchedly long tour of the breathtaking Boreal Falls conducted as ever by the Lady Amelia. As if she weren't bad enough, an honor guard of soldiers, their breastplates red in the setting sun, march ahead of the procession and protect you from seeing anything unrehearsed. It's a dog's life being an ambassador. So that is The Meteor, The Stone, and The Long Glass of Sherbet by Graham Nelson, 1996. And I think we should play that next.
I like it. I dig it.
Okay. Great. Awesome.
Shall we spoil?
Let us spoil.
Shall we get spoiled?
Yes, do the double. This is the rare double spoiler fence.
Secret probation spoiler fence. So the rare folks, get your cameras out. You don't see this one often, but a double spoiler fence, which in horse jumping is called an oxer, when there's those two fences that the horse jumps. Because I'm dating a horse girl.
Yeah, you are.
And I made a joke once where it should have a horse on the front, and on the back of a shirt should show another gate and be surprise oxer. And she thought that was hilarious and was very thrilled that I made an appropriate horse joke. Like, I was understanding. So she felt she had put the work in and it was getting rewarded for the work she had put into our relationship. Anyway, this double fence that you can leap with or without your horse is dividing the line between spoiling and not spoiling these two lovely games that we just talked about. Now, the podcast isn't going anywhere. So if you haven't played both of these games and you might want to play both or either of them, then you should probably stop now, because you can always come back and listen to the rest of the show later, because the next half is us going to talk about both Uncle Zebulon's Uncle Zebulon's Will and A Change in the Weather in ways that spoil specific puzzles and talk about the ending and talk about how to actually solve things, which can ruin a text adventure if you haven't played it yet. Or the fancy word for text adventure nowadays is interactive fiction.
Interactive fiction. Say it with your pinky up. Interactive fiction.
Yes. So if you want to be a fancy person and play these games the way they're meant to be played and cheat the way Kay and I cheat, which is to look up things online, then you don't want to listen to the rest of this. But if you want to cheat in a new, exciting way, then you can listen to the rest of this podcast, which will help you probably solve some of the more difficult puzzles. And now we will talk about the rest of these two IF Comp winners from 1995. Leap with your horse.
Leap, boing. Boing.
That's the sound of a horse leap.
Boing. Okay.
Boing.
So you said you want to talk about the shovel, and you said you want to talk about the fox.
Shovel and the fox when it comes to A Change in the Will. So the shovel puzzle is super simple. It's barely even a puzzle, but I really liked it. I was like, this is my favorite part of the game. It happened early on. My favorite part of the game. So you come across a shovel that's stuck in the ground, and it's been broken, like it kind of got stuck and it snapped off. So it's very much a King Arthur thing. It's a sword in the stone. Like, here's this thing sticking out of the ground, and you can't get it out. But how do you get it out? Are you the chosen one? Do you pull it out and then, oh no, pour water on it, and that turns the dirt back to mud, and you can just suck it out of the game. And that was great. Like, it's a great real world puzzle where I had to think about it. I'm like, well, shouldn't I just be able to pour water in this? And it worked. And I was like, that's great. That's what I want from these games. So I thought that was a really great, super simple puzzle, but it was exactly what I like from a thing where you see it, it's confusing, you think about it for a second, and then you can solve it, and it works. And that was great. Very rewarding. Excellent puzzle, even though it's really simple. I really liked it. That was my first puzzle that I liked.
Excellent. Yeah.
Did you like it?
I did. I did.
Did you solve it a different way, or is that the way you're supposed to solve it?
Literally, I was just like, the only thing I have is a bucket. What do you do with a bucket? You put water in a bucket. I mean, pour water on spade or whatever. So that's...
I liked it, though. Because it was one of those things where I didn't just try stuff. I thought about it and then tried the thing I thought about. Versus sometimes I solve puzzles where I just like... doing everything I've got at work. And so it's just, hey, look, that one of those things worked. Whereas this, it made me feel smart. So I liked it.
Right.
Throwing the shaft, like once you've got this little stick, throwing the shaft for the fox to grab and bring back to you, totally fine. Mm-hmm. Needing to do that twice, so the second time the fox brings you back something else, surprise, that's just punishing. I know it's a cruel game, but that was, it should be, you throw a thing, the fox goes, and then they bring you back something
else. But he comes back, he drops it at your feet, and he looks at you expectantly. Have you never played with a dog? You never get to throw the stick once. You're there all day.
Yes, and that's what I did. And I did throw it, but it's still, as soon as maybe you're right, because I guess everybody would do it. But at the time when it brought back, I was like, what if I didn't throw it twice? What if I thought, like, just...
Well, that's what I did the first time, is I threw it once, and went, oh, that was cute, and... Yeah, I didn't do it.
Well, see, then that's what I'm talking about. I hate it when in there's a thing you have to do twice in Moonmist.
Yeah.
There's a place where you look in a certain place, and it's the second time you look there you find something. And I didn't like that then. I like Moonmist. I don't like a game where you have to do something more than once and you get a different reaction. I don't like that.
Okay. I understand, but I feel like it gives you enough hints when it's like the fox drops at your feet and looks at you expectantly.
If you met me, there are no enough hints. No such thing. Although, I mean, I'm saying that, and yet I did it. I didn't need help. I did throw the thing a second time. So maybe I'm completely wrong about this. I think it's more that I have a knee jerk reaction always. Even if the game makes it obvious I should do something twice, it always kind of bugs me when I have to do something twice. Mm-hmm. Almost certainly that means in the text adventure I'm working on, I will accidentally put in a thing you have to do twice, and I'll be like, yeah, I'm a hypocrite. What do you want from me? That's how I roll. Those are the two puzzles that really stood out, even though the last puzzle is basically like shoring up that bridge and using the dirt things and whatever.
But right.
I found that very hard.
I found it a little bit difficult visualizing some of the what was going on with the earth and the water, and some of it seemed like it was super important, and yet I was just, you know, and there's this crack in the ground, and you can't step over it unless there's something, a bush or why can't you step over the crack? It was a me problem, not an it problem, but just visualizing the terrain sometimes.
That can be a problem since unlike a lot of the earlier games we played, where we talk about how it's like sometimes they only have so many bites left and they got to make these really short, terse descriptions. This being this poetic, lovely language can make everything seem important because everything is written so beautifully. It's like, well, why would you describe that like that if it wasn't like super important? Well, no, it's just how everything is described, the sunset in a beautiful way. I'm like, is the sunset important? Should I be digging at the sunset? What does this mean? I also found difficult to know what I was supposed to be doing, and difficult sometimes to know like what I was supposed to work with, and was I making progress? Like sometimes I was like, I was digging there by the bridge, but was I supposed to be doing that? Was that a good thing? Should I try more?
Well, talk about digging. So I mean, one thing you need to dig in the ground like six or seven times, you know, in order to.
But it's a cruel game.
Yeah.
It's cruel, cruel summer, as Bananarama said. They are wise.
They are. It's true. I forgot what I was going to say.
So how much cheating did you have to do to solve the game?
I felt like I made it 70%. When it came to, okay, where I really fell down was, like, I had the sandbags, or I had access to the sandbags. I can carry one at a time. And then on my way, I knew I needed to put them somewhere. But there were, like, many places, a few places that you could put the sandbags.
Right.
Are you supposed to be right by the bridge or, like, up the hill before the water gets... So I wasn't sure about that, and I found that frustrating. And then on the way, there's a branch that's been hit by lightning, and it's kind of smoldering and on fire, and you can pick it up while it's still on fire, and you can carry it a little bit, but then it goes out. And so when I had to cheat.
Exact same.
And it turns out you don't need... The fire doesn't do anything. That's a red herring. But you do need the branch. You need to carry the sandbag and the branch, and you need to take it down right to where the bridge is, and you need to put the sandbag down, and you need to shore up the bridge just at the right time. And then I think you need to run back and get the other sandbag, except...
Yeah, I think I think you put the thing down, you shore it up, you go back, you get the sandbag.
Yeah, but then you can't get because the... Oh, and you had to push the boulder out of the way in a particular direction. Now, I was pushing the boulder before, but it would destroy the bridge, and then... But I think you had to, like, push it west or something, and then at this point...
Well, I dug a thing. I think I dug a trench to then push it, and then it would go that way. I think that's what I did, maybe. It was a while ago I played this.
Anyway, so at this point, I'm full on cheating at this point, you know, just, like, doing what it says. And then you have to go at the other sandbag, but you can't get there because the bush is gone because it was destroyed by the boulder or something. Anyway, and then, so then somehow you have to put the spade in the crack, and see, that's when I was really having trouble. Like, how big is this gap that, like, I can't step over it, and yet putting a shovel in there is going to make it walkable? Anyway, so at this point, at the whole end of the game, that last maybe 30%, I was just, like, doing what I was told and enjoying the ride.
Which I totally enjoyed reading the game, but I end up doing the same thing. Where at the end, I was back to the Club Floyd transcript, saying, "Okay, what did you folks do when you got together and played it?" And I had to look up, basically be told what to do. And I can still really enjoy a game and enjoy a story when I have to do that, because sometimes it's just the game's too hard for me. Mm-hmm. But I will say, like, for Uncle Zebulon, being able to just solve the game when you finish, it feels a lot nicer to go to, even if I need hints on a game, if I don't have to resort to, like, reading instructions from a walkthrough, it's a much more fulfilling experience. But, you know, it's not always the game's fault. Sometimes it's just like, that game's too hard for me. Right. Not every game is for me, but this game was too hard for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but fun. And
Totally.
And for Zebulon, I probably did it, and I didn't time it. I felt like it took me maybe 3 hours. I did it over a course of a day in a couple of sessions. And
For me, it was a single session. Like, it's a much short, both of them are actually short games. Like, mm-hmm. Like you said, once you know what to do in a change in the weather, you can knock it out in 20 minutes, but it takes a long time to know what to do. Uncle Zebulon, you can knock out the first time in one or two settings, one or two sessions.
Yeah, and there's some discrete puzzles. I mean, there's the alchemy puzzle where you're putting things in an acid and changing it from one. And there's a few different things that you can change. You get one shot, though, because it often it bubbles away the acid.
I was okay with that because, you know, I kind of anticipate before I change things, I'm going to be saving. So yeah. I was okay with that kind of cruelty.
Uh-huh. So there was that. But then there was the note that he left behind that said, like, I figured out how to turn good metals to base metals, but not the other way around yet. So that kind of applied to me that's what you're, one of the things you're trying to do is trying to figure that out, but then you don't, that's not part of the game.
Well, it kind of is. Don't you have to, what is the coin you change? You change something to iron, isn't it?
You start with the gold marble, the gold sun marble, and you make it iron or something, so.
Yeah, so that's what you do. You change it to a more base metal.
Hmm. Okay, right. But his note said he wanted to go the other way.
Yeah, he wants to go the other way, but it tells you, like, he currently has a thing that doesn't do this. And there's like this mirror, there's this dog statue, which I thought was a little thing. And then I tried to take it and it goes, oh, it's way too big. Like, oh, it's a really big dog that's got like a third eye in its forehead and a couple of eyes that look like they could take lenses or whatever. And then you get some lenses and you put them in and then it projects beams out that become a hologram. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of cool. But again, you have to get multiple lenses out there because there's this shed outside the house. And how do you get multiple things out there? Well, you've got this, what is it, a jar or something? And there's two bottles.
Yeah.
You put stuff in one bottle, it teleports.
Yeah. Teleporting.
Bingo. Now I know. Yeah. So the one thing I want to take out is the receiving bottle. Take that and stick it in the shed. And now I did for a while think, but if I leave the house with my thing, does that then end the game? Can I go back in without it? But you can't. Like, you can leave with one item and you come back. And you can even leave with the wrong item and then go back in with it. You just have to never have more than one item out of the house.
Did you do some of the bad wrong endings of the game? I enjoyed some of them.
Oh, no. I think I only got good endings because I'm such a great gamer.
Oh, sure. I'm a completionist and I like to get all the bad endings. You can just, at any point... just leave the garden, just walk home without finishing the game. And it gives you an "are you sure?" But then you can. And it's like you go home and you become an accountant and you have a nice life. But man, you feel like you didn't quite get it all.
Right. And things could have gone better.
Yeah, things could have gotten better. And there was another one too.
What if you play this game and you are an accountant though?
Oh, then you're sad.
That must be sad that people pick like the thing you do.
I want to be a producer. And there was another one, I don't remember now, but it was a similar, not quite won the game ending that was also fun. I didn't write it down. I don't remember now. But
you're too busy being an accountant. I think I'd be a good accountant. I think I actually would have enjoyed being an accountant. I'm not really into other people's money, but I like the idea of like tables and numbers and min-maxing and stuff. I think I would have been good at it. I would have been a good accountant.
Okay.
I missed my calling.
Things
could have gone better. So there was, what else was there? It dropped at the very end of the game. There's like because you open up this portal, which is kind of cool. Like it's magic. You're opening a portal. You open up one thing and you go to the other place. And there's the room. I forgot. There's the room that's like, you go through the mirror and it's like a mirror. The room that's the opposite on the other side.
Right. So through the looking glass sort of situation.
Yeah, exactly. But then when you go out the one door in the mirror room, it doesn't lead to the same place. Like the rest of the world isn't the same. Just these two rooms facing each other on either side of the mirror are mirrors. I dug that. Like I dug that. At the very end, you got these three coins you've made, and there's three statues to the three. I think it was Venus, Mars, and Saturn. So like you've got this thing that tells you which. Like Mercury is the messenger and Venus is copper or whatever. And so you had three statues to go, okay, I've got to get a copper one, an iron one, and a lead one. And you've got copper and lead. You just find those. So you got to change something into iron. So you change the gold and iron using your little asset. And then obviously what you're supposed to do is chuck the three coins in the fountain. So it's not really a last puzzle. It's just a thing that's obvious to do. Mm-hmm. But I liked it. Like I liked the journey of it and it was kind of neat. And then you see this world, this big city on the other side of the land that you now have access to, and great adventures might await you there. And I dug it. Like I liked this game a lot. I thought this was really well done. I really this is my sort of adventure game. I really liked it.
Agreed. It wasn't too hard and it wasn't too long. And
there's this portal you open up that you can go into.
Yeah.
Well, you go through the portal in the shed that you activate with your laser dog holograph thing. It makes more sense in the game than you think. Inside there, you get this clicker, like a little thing, this little remote. And when you click it, the portal closes. Mm-hmm. Right? And so I was thinking, like, you can get trapped in a non-winning state. Like, if you leave and you enter without the little clicker, then you can't, you'll get trapped. But you have to use the clicker to cross again. Like once you leave with the little clicker, the portal closes, and now the clicker is the thing that opens and closes the portal for you. Mm-hmm. So it's a neat way to avoid a one-way trap. By doing this, you can shut the portal, and now you can't enter this thing without the portal, without the clicker rather, so you can't get trapped on the wrong side. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was good, a good way to make the game. So I admired that the author did that so that I couldn't get trapped on the wrong side of the portal. So I thought, oh, well done. Well, way to avoid the one-way trap. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Let's see, what else was there? Was the there's a room with a model of the solar system, mm-hmm. sort of thing. That was kind of fun.
Yep, it was neat. It was a neat setting. Yeah, kind of magical, also realistic. And I dug it. I only like four or five puzzles, but they're clear and they're easy to do. I didn't have to cheat in this one. I just was able to do it. What about you?
No, I did not need to cheat. I felt like
look at that.
Yeah. Felt like I didn't do it in the 2 hours it said it would, but it was more like three, but you know, I did it. So,
sure.
And I liked the idea that your family has already, the rest of your family has already been through the house and picked through the stuff and taken all the good stuff, which means there don't need to be a lot of items in this game. It's not a house full of things, you know. It's just like all the good stuff's been picked over. There's some,
and you do find one thing tucked in a cushion of a chair because it's like your uncle's favorite chair, and then you know it is. And if you sit on there, you feel it, and you can see how your family, not knowing the uncle as well, would just like have ignored the chair.
Yeah, it's like a ratty old chair.
Right. But you sit on it because it's his favorite chair, and you're like, oh, hey, I feel a thing. So, and that was in keeping with the story and your character, and so little details like that I thought were really good.
Anyway, I enjoyed it.
So I've got my ending here. It says, in a total of 354 turns, I'm surprised it was that many, you've achieved a score of 75 out of a possible 75 and visited 12 locations of 12.
In a total of 347 turns, you have achieved 75 out of 75, visited 12 out of 12 rooms. Yeah.
Okay, you win.
I'm just a better player than you.
But yes, nobody's arguing that. This is long established. I liked both these games very much. Mm-hmm. Uncle Zebulon's Will is more my kind of game, like a more simple, straightforward fantasy sort of solve the puzzles, wave the wand, change things. Mm-hmm. I don't really love it. Like, I don't want to go back to Zork, like a lot of fantasy things. But this was much more straight ahead, mini Infocom type game. So I think I felt more comfortable because I'm only just dipping my toe in this modern IF weirdness world. And so it's a bit of a culture shock to do a change in the weather. It's like, here it is. You're out on a hike and you don't know what to do. And it's very difficult. I'm like, but I'm just a simple Infocom man. And so Uncle Zebulon's Will is a nice bridge game. Like, if you're used to Infocom, it's here. It's modern. It's made in TADS. You're going to play it in a different system, but it's going to be gentle. The things are familiar. You still get a wand. So it really kind of held my hand into the new world. So probably more appropriate for me. So
yeah,
I dug it. I dug both games. So I'm really glad we played both of these. This is an exciting journey we're on. I like it.
Yes. No, we've played Journey and that was not exciting.
That was not exciting.
No.
Great. Great.
I guess that's all.
That's it.
That's it.
That's all she wrote.
Yeah.
Yep. That's it. But we will continue. We continue with this newfangled modern stuff and see where it takes us. So if you want, this has been Eat My Grew, the interactive fiction podcast that's more than just Infocom, baby. If you want, you can send us feedback. You can email us. At grew@monsterfeet.com or hit us up on that newfangled Twitter. He is at KSavitz. I am at Carrington. And if you want to help people find this podcast, you could be nice.
Stand by the side of the road with a giant sign. This is podcast here.
And send us a photo of you and your giant sign telling people to read or listen to our podcast. And then we will talk about you on our show. Show notes and such can be found at monsterfeet.com. And thanks to MC Frontalot for still letting us use his song as our theme tune. We appreciate it here in these modern times. Next up will be The Meteor, The Stone, and A Long Glass of Sherbert, Graham Nelson's IF Comp winner from 1996. Punting down the road, our decision of what to do after that. Thank you for podcasting with me, Kay.
Thank you for podcasting with me, Karen.
You're welcome. I'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, no. You have walked into the slavering fangs of a lurking Gru.
Where the link? The Sherbert link. Oh, here it is. When I look at an IFDB... the first editorial review says, another of the growing pile of games set in the Zork universe. So,
oh, you've got to be kidding me. Just when I think I'm out, they pull me back in.
Going back. But now it's the fanfic Zork, so...